Hey listeners, this is a quick note from me, Ryan Nanny, to let you know that we are taking three paywalled episodes from the Phantom Island Vault, and we're opening them up to everyone. We picked our We're Not All Like This episode about the University of Texas, a Numbers and Words I did with Bill Connolly and Parker Fleming about strength of schedule and how it's used and sometimes misused, and a conversation Godfrey and I had recently about what coaches think about when they're looking at potential new jobs. Those are all in the feed in their original publishing time, so you'll have to look around for them a little bit, but they're now open to everybody, paid subscriber or not. If you are already a paid subscriber to Phantom Island, you've already had access to all of these episodes, and we thank you for your support in making them and the rest of this show possible. And we've got more subscriber-exclusive material coming. Godfrey is actually recording with Bill today for an episode coming out on Friday. If you're not a paid subscriber, we wanted to throw you a little extra listening to enjoy over the holiday season, in case you're on a flight or on a long drive, or you just want something to put on while you tackle a mountain of dirty dishes in the sink. We hope you'll consider going to phantomisland.show and signing up for a paid membership. And last of all, to everybody listening, thank you for supporting the show in whatever manner you already have. We hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Every rustle in the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. Stephen Godfrey, what do you remember about the Concorde?
Ooh, the jet?
The very same.
Oh, man, I fell down at the behest of one of my kids, I fell down a Wikipedia hole on this recently because they didn't believe it. this is tough because
I'm sorry I put you on the spot here.
I just had this conversation with my kids. We were on vacation or something. It had to do with where the Concorde was built.
Okay.
Was it Boeing? I turned this into asking you questions. So the Concorde it was a plane that went real fast good, yeah. Except it had a penchant for exploding.
I mean, I think the supersonic element was probably more what they were excited to talk to people about.
Yeah. Is my mind's eye is also telling me the Concorde had the nose that was depressed.
Yeah.
That had the slanty little. Yeah. It could take you, I think, from New York to London in 2 or 3 hours. Is that right?
Yes, you could do a supersonic flight. So New York to Paris is the example here. Took about 8 hours, 7 or 8 hours, and this could do it in 3.5. So it could travel at about twice the speed of a regular aircraft.
Except they would occasionally blow up.
Well, I mean...
Or there was a crash? No, you asked me. I'm trying to remember.
There was a crash in... July 2000. But this was the only fatal accident involving a Concorde.
Yes, but then after that, the Concorde was no longer a thing.
It had already been, I would say, in decline a little bit because this was just not... They were, as I recall, it was expensive. There weren't that many flights, so like it was definitely a like luxury thing to do. Do you want to know why I'm asking you about the Concorde today?
We've pivoted directly into our comfortable dad shoes era of podcasting, and we're just going to do like History Channel type shit.
We'll get there eventually. Don't worry. Buddy. No, this is a headline from Mike Florio's Pro Football Talk from November 19th, 2025.
Oh, wow.
NFL monitors return of supersonic flight for potential European expansion.
I'm sorry, could you read that dateline again?
November 19th. 2025. NFL monitors return of supersonic flight for potential European expansion. This is originally reported by the Wall Street Journal.
So a week ago?
Yeah.
As we're recording this?
Yeah. Concorde has not flown in about 25 years, just so everybody understands.
Okay.
But the NFL is keeping an eye on this so that they can consider the possibility of putting a franchise.
Oh, boy.
In Europe. And that's what we're here to talk about today. I want to preface by saying that this episode was primarily researched and first come up with by our intern, Ryan Fortune. So thank you to him for his hard work on this one.
Thank you, other Ryan.
Thank you, other Ryan.
Too many Ryans.
Younger, more vibrant Ryan.
Happier.
Never
walks in the office complaining about the sleep he didn't get.
That's true. He doesn't do that. So today we're going to do a little bit history, a little bit thought exercise, and again, because we try to do questions here on Phantom Island, and I don't know if we're going to answer this one all the way,
mm-hmm.
we're going to
ask, what would it actually look like to put an NFL team in London? We're going to say London for these purposes, but you can insert European city here if you prefer another destination.
Oi.
Let's do the history part first.
Yep.
So far, the NFL has played, you take a guess, how many regular season, not preseason, regular season games has the NFL played in the United Kingdom so far?
Is this, I feel like this is already a trick question.
Why?
Because I remember random games happening internationally when I was a kid, but sure. I do mean random, like yes. Wasn't there a game in Tokyo?
Yes, what you are talking about are preseason games.
Right.
I will tell, to give you a sense of like, time limitation, yes. The first international series game, uh-huh. Which is what the NFL calls
yes.
All of these, was in October 2007. So okay. That's our start date. I'm telling you, you don't
yours
have to think about anything
before was
that.
Sent over by SB Nation, Vox Media, to cover a Jaguars, mm-hmm. as they said all week, mm-hmm. Cowboys game
yep.
That you and I looked up and laughed at the other day, mainly just we were just laughing at the Cowboys roster. And that was in 2014 or 15. I can't remember.
Right.
Time flat circle. They, at that point, I'm drawing this out so I can start guessing. You said it started in 7 and we're in 25.
Yeah, we're done. We just finished the last international game a couple weeks ago. You don't have to talk about it. It's fine.
30. Oh, wait. Were we with the Falcons
no, you,
the last
it
one?
No, you okay. Actually weren't the last one.
No, Madrid was. It was like a bad bad Commanders game. Yeah.
I just didn't want to bring
don't
it.
Don't make Falcons
okay,
jokes where you
right,
don't need
all right,
to.
All right. I'm sorry.
40.
Pretty close. 42.
Okay. Oh, 40, nice. Nice. 42, yeah.
42 in the UK. 7 others in Europe at large.
Can you go back for a second? What was the first one? Because I remember a tremendous amount of hand-wringing domestically that we would go all the way as if we were going to have to fight a narwhal
sure.
As we took
as
a steamship.
As if we were playing on the moon. Yeah.
Yes, just like we were going to brave the Arctic wilds to get to England and then play a game where someone might die in a bog because the field condition. Do you remember how histrionic people were when this started?
It was treated as a big cranky thing. This was in the 2007 season. The New York Giants defeated the Miami Dolphins by a score of 13-10.
Ugh.
That, of course, we did not realize it. That was the Giants team that would go on to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl.
God. Nice reminder that Giants team actually low-key sucked.
To beat the undefeated. That's the undefeated Patriots.
Yeah. Just a reminder that Giants team actually was ass.
In doing some research for this episode, stumbled upon an old article by our friend Roger Sherman in which he noted that of the first 30, at the time that he had written this article, the first 30 London games, none of them included two teams that had winning records at the time. It was always maybe you at best you got one team that was coming in with a winning record.
Yes.
I extended the research since then, and there's only one game. So of these 42 regular season games...
I'm sorry, wait. Of 42 regular season games, how many featured teams with both with winning records?
Where both teams entered with a winning record in 2022, again, the Giants, the 3-1 Giants played the 3-1 Packers. And that's the only one I can find where both teams went to London above 500.
Yikes.
So I say that because part of what we started doing the research for this episode is figure out, like, well, why do teams – it feels like teams play poorly in London. That doesn't actually bear itself out if you look at teams, how they play compared to the average for the season or what they do afterwards.
Oh, no. I've never thought they were bad for going to London.
You
I thought we were sending our bad to London.
Yeah.
I mean, how many of these games involve the Jags?
The Jags have more London games than anyone. They have made extended deals to do repeated games in London.
Sure.
And for a while, a lot of the reason why the idea of a franchise in London even got brought up, for people who may not remember this, was that the Jags were constantly dangled as the team the NFL was going to move, was going to pull them out of Jacksonville and put them in London.
Yes, I remember that. I also remember when I went to cover the Jags-Cowboys games that British sports fans are just as global as American sports fans.
Yes.
And caught on very early to the fact that the NFL was maybe force-feeding them some like less than FDA-quality meat here. And most of the young, at the time, teenage to 20-something, early 30s fans who were adopting NFL fandom patterns, like I'm gonna follow this during the week. I'm gonna have some sort of consumption rite of passage, yeah. and like it becomes yeah. a part of my sports life. Those people were not adopting the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were cherry picking at the time. It was like, I remember a lot of Broncos, a lot of Patriots, teams like of a little bit of the Drew Brees Saints. I remember finding a Falcons fan when Matt Ryan was a quarterback. Because they had sort of rejected the Soylent Green that the NFL was sending over. And that shouldn't shock anybody. Yeah. But yeah, so I would say the mission of like the Jags are going to be sort of London's team, but still actually be in Florida kind of failed on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on what you think the purpose of it was. Because
money?
Part of the reason why the Jaguars are no longer in this conversation is they've come to an agreement with the city of Jacksonville. That stadium is getting like a major renovation such that the Jaguars themselves have said, like, we plan to be here for decades. Like, they've sort of quashed any sort of rumor to it. But I think London was maybe a more extreme version of what LA was for so many years, where this was the city you used to sort of say, like, hey, give me what I want or this will happen. Now, I don't know if that's like the most primary reason why the Jags are in Jacksonville instead of London. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
But I think it was a useful tool.
I'm sure it's still going on. We just probably don't hear about it as much.
Yeah.
Relocation threats were probably the heaviest cudgel an ownership group could wield.
Yeah. Now baseball uses them instead.
Yeah, baseball sure does. And it works over in baseball. They actually move. Because before the Jacksonville London battle, the only one there's two that come to mind, but I don't know if they ever got that serious. Buffalo and Toronto.
Buffalo and Toronto is one. Yeah, sure.
And then after Katrina, there was a move by the Benson family to try and permanently relocate the Saints to San Antonio.
Sure.
I mean,
obviously we have a team
the Chargers
in Las Vegas
left.
And two teams in LA that weren't there before.
Yeah.
So
it has
reared its head.
Feels like California is sort of its own separate designation in this conversation.
Maybe so.
And then I guess I should maybe tip my hat or something to St. Louis fans. But it seems to have waned.
That's a Battlehawks city now. It's
That's
fine.
Right. It's all shout out to Coach Beck. He follows me on Twitter. this feels a little bit like it's gone by the wayside, except today we're going to ask this question because I assume, Ryan, you're maybe not talking about relocating a team. Are we talking about expanding the NFL to London?
Well, that's what's interesting about this is that for years, the idea of a franchise being in London was framed around relocation. But it's something the NFL still gets asked about and has not dropped. In July of 2025, Roger Goodell, during an interview, said he wants to get up to 16 regular season games played internationally, not in London specifically, not in Europe specifically. They're mm-hmm. planning one. They've gone to South America. They're planning one for Australia. Like we're very much going all over the globe, but he wants to do the math quickly there. He wants to put us in a situation where every year, every franchise is playing one international game. But then in September of this year, he got asked by CNBC about this question again about like, is the NFL looking to do this? And his quote was, there are markets that could certainly support a team. And he's previously said he thinks London is one of those markets. We've always focused on what are the competitive consequences of that? Can we manage that? So this is not something the NFL has said like, no, we want to like go internationally, but we're sort of like not exploring the idea of a franchise anymore. They get asked about putting a Super Bowl in London. They've sort of said like, well, for that to happen, we'd have to have a franchise here. Are you ruling out a franchise here? Nope, certainly not doing that.
Is that under some precedent that I don't know about that the NFL won't take the Super Bowl to a non-Super Bowl city?
I think it
Sorry, a non-NFL city.
I think it has less to do with the fact that they don't want to take it to a non-NFL city and more so that if they take it to London, then it opens up maybe a bigger can of worms that the rest of ownership wants to do. And that means also for the existing owners, that dilutes their chances of hosting a Super Bowl, which is a valuable thing still.
You're from Tampa. We don't need to go there as often as we do.
I don't go there as often as the NFL does, that's for sure. All right, so let's talk a little bit about why putting a team in London or having a European franchise would be enticing to the NFL. The Kansas City-San Francisco Super Bowl, the one played in February 2024 that went to overtime.
It was in Levi's Stadium in Milpitas, California.
That got a 185.9 million person audience, television audience worldwide. Okay. And about 62 million of that was global.
All right.
By comparison, the 2023 Cricket World Cup final got a television audience of 300 million, and the 2022 World Cup final, which is France-Argentina, if I'm remembering correctly.
Sounds right.
Got 571 million people watching it worldwide on television. So the short answer is, why put a team in London? It is because the NFL has more or less reached a saturation point with its domestic television audience. It's done a great job. Like, again, if you are of a certain age, you can remember when it was not a foregone conclusion that of the 10 biggest broadcasts in the year, probably 9 of them would be NFL games. Mm-hmm. Like that, it was maybe like the Super Bowl would rate up there, and maybe one other or two other games would, but the NFL has achieved television dominance unlike anything any sport in this country has achieved before that time.
There is no precedent to where we're at right now from a viewership standpoint.
But because there's no such thing as too much television money, the only way for the NFL to keep growing that pot is to go abroad, specifically to go get television audiences from abroad. Mm-hmm. That same Super Bowl that we're talking about got 3.4 million viewers in the UK. But the average broadcast of a London game in the U.S. gets 6.2 million viewers. So what I'm telling
U.S.
you,
viewers.
U.S. viewers. So what I'm telling you is about twice the audience watches dog shit Jets Broncos game in the United States as U.K. viewers watched that Super Bowl.
Okay, but if I'm a layman here, I'm just sitting, I'm thinking, well, then why are we pushing so hard to get the NFL in Europe when the numbers are lower?
Okay, so I think part of the problem is that we're going to talk about that because we're going to sort of say, let's assume that the case is you need to build a television product that has worldwide appeal. You need to build something like the World Cup or the Olympics, mm-hmm. where no matter where it is, no matter when it is, three times as many people as watch it now are going to watch it across the globe.
I get that. I also get that while Americans believe we are the cultural point of origin,
yeah,
for the rest of the world, you know, Hollywood certainly made that a real thing starting in about the 1950s in mm-hmm. terms of exporting pop culture. And then American pop music did the same thing with a healthy amount of help from Europe and the United Kingdom. The UK is probably the best launching point to get to the rest of the world because of the old British Empire, honestly.
Sure.
Like, there's a lot of stuff that comes. I mean, I could see the logic in New York at the NFL office of, well, if we've got to go to one place internationally, mm-hmm. that could draw brand appeal to the rest of the world just by virtue of one move. I think it probably would be London, even though the numbers might bear out as the demographic shifts in the world. I'm kind of going on here about this. Like, I guess maybe a couple of years ago, someone would have been like Beijing, you know. But like, mm-hmm. I guess I can see where you're going from this standpoint that London would still work as a sort of cultural bellwether for every other non-American nation to pay more attention. It seems like a stretch, but I'll go with it.
So think about it from this perspective. Let's say you are a potential NFL fan living in Europe. You are getting a handful of games, like four or five games a year.
Mm-hmm.
There's no regular cadence to them. It's not like, oh, every X weekend it's going to be.
You're talking about not games broadcast on television. Look, you're talking about games in England, yes, or in Germany.
Games that are in your time zone or okay. adjacent to your time zone.
So how many games are played this year?
Let's
count Spain, England, Germany. Let's just say European games.
Okay,
here.
So we had one German game, one Irish game. One game in Spain, that's three total. And mm-hmm. then we have
I believe it was three in England.
Two at Tottenham, one at Wembley. So yes. That's six games yep. total.
Yep, okay.
They're not at the very beginning of the season.
Nope.
They don't last through the end of the season.
They're not allowed to be at the end.
And as we've said, a lot of crappy teams here.
Yeah, but I'm not,
I guess what I'm saying is there is a barrier to sort of like making these a thing that you can like really latch on to.
I would agree. Although, just for the sake of the of laying all the facts off of the show, every NFL franchise has now played one of these games since the international series started, right? There is a mandate from the league that you step up once every X amount of years, right?
But that said, the variance is wide. The Cowboys game that you went to?
Yeah.
That's the only time they've done an international game.
Oh, once. Word.
And I know we talk about like the overexposure of the Dallas Cowboys, but like...
Well, that's because Jared, I mean, he's going to fight back, whereas like I think... Here's a good question. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have this pulled up. I don't want to stump you.
That's fine.
What's the second most frequent team that isn't Jacksonville?
The Miami Dolphins. I played 7 times.
I would have never guessed that.
Sure.
But I do remember there being a pretty strong British boomer contingent because of what they did get in TV back in the day. It was like, you know, Dan Marino.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I the other thing to remember in context is that if you live in the United States, the London game is a quirk of sorts. It doesn't, for, you know, for your team 1 week a year, it throws you off of your routine. But the other 16 games, you get to watch them. You understand when they're going to watch, and they are in time zones that are meant to be American audience friendly.
I personally was thrilled that I got the Falcons loss out of the way before lunch two weeks ago. It was very nice.
Sure. But if you are a European fan, outside of these, what do we say, 7 games that are being played in Europe, that were played in Europe?
6, but yeah.
Yeah. And none, which if you are attached to one of these teams, at max, only one of them, or that's not true, the Vikings played twice, so like at max, 2 of them are featured. If you cared about the Vikings, it's like, oh good, they're on locally. But the rest of the year, the NFL's broadcast schedule is not geared towards you. Like, part of why that Super Bowl number is what it is for the UK.
I know why.
It's because it's the middle of the night.
Yeah. And yeah, I was about to say it.
Like, it's simply a time thing.
And the league doesn't help because it's always locking the Super Bowl start time to the Eastern time zone, the Eastern seaboard in America.
Eastern prime time, more or less.
So that game being played in California had no bearing on its kickoff time. It's always engineered around prime time on the East Coast.
Right.
Entering prime time.
For those who don't have it handy, because this is going to come from another context, the time difference between London and New York City, most of the year, we're not getting into like the specifics of how it doesn't always hold this, is 5 hours. London to LA is time difference of 8 hours. So
this is something I want to dwell on for a second because it has to be a hindrance. So again, only focusing on what I consume of the NFL, like there was this big to-do. Apparently the Falcons have like a sizable fan base in Berlin, or like it's one of those like NFL-founded kind of deals. But they did, like I saw some press on them. And I thought to myself, all right, well, okay, they're playing in Germany. They played against the Colts and lost. Are you just like screwed at work every Monday? No, I'm asking, like if you're an NFL fan, and we have British listeners to Phantom Island, so maybe somebody can answer this for me. Look, Men in Blazers has made a wonderful art of the idea of like set your alarm for 5:30 or 6 on Saturday. Yep. Get up, make a coffee.
Yep.
Enjoy the best soccer in the world.
Yeah.
You what are you telling a Brit? Look, ignore your wife and children. Stay up.
Become nocturnal. You are now a raccoon.
Do a small amount of amphetamine and drink reasonably, and you're going to be in just the right mindset to watch, and it can be any team, not just my crappy team. But imagine being a supporter of a team in like okay, as we record this, your team, the Eagles, lost yesterday. You were pissed, but it was at a normal time of day to be pissed off.
Yeah, I could go to bed at a reasonable hour. I could, you know.
So is the, I guess right now is the NFL marketing the idea of just like, be a zombie. Fuck yourself every 36 hours.
Yeah, if you had to, and that's for like, No, it's not a great plan.
I assume the Brits are, and the Europeans in general.
Yeah.
If they are following this sort of with a cadence.
Mm-hmm.
They're at an extreme disadvantage. I have subjected you to, I think, 3 games this year of my beloved longtime fandom of the Valencia Soccer Bats.
Yeah.
But that shit comes on at like 2 o'clock in our office in the afternoon, and I'm like, oh, Soccer Bats.
Right.
Again, I don't know how like, let's talk this out now because I've dwelled too much on the time. Like, it is really hard to get the fan base any bigger, I guess, if you're asking people to maybe wake up, check and see if you won or lost, and then watch a replay.
100%. Yes. Like, I think it is a meaningful barrier to entry for a huge part of the world.
if there were to jump ahead,
yeah,
one team in Europe,
yeah.
Think about all of the sort of side elements of your day as a fan.
Yeah.
So if you're a Vikings fan,
yeah,
you've got an eye on what the Packers are doing. Maybe the Bears are on Monday night, like,
and the Lions are on a bye.
Imagine the lack of cohesion, yeah, if you were in what, I mean, God, I'm sure you're going to take me through like what division they would be in or how godforsaken that would be.
Yeah.
You're always out of time, literally.
Sure.
Not without time. I mean, out of the timeline, out of the time zone, like dislocated.
I'm so excited because you're basically saying you're getting into the real meat of this episode.
Okay. I didn't know if I was going on a tangent.
No, this
okay.
is helpful. Like, this is where it was really fun.
I'm kind of mad.
Like, put up on the whiteboard and figure out like where are the pros and cons. How does this actually work in practice?
Yeah.
But we're gonna get into all of that. Before we do, we're gonna do a quick message from our friends at Homefield.
Normally when I do these ad reads for Homefield, I try to focus them on something that's not time sensitive. So you could listen to this episode at theoretically any point, and the information would be at least mostly accurate. But I'm not going to do that today because I need to impart some critical information to you that has an expiration date. Through Tuesday, December 2nd, you can go to homefieldapparel.com and enter code HOMEFIELD30. It's on the website. You don't have to just remember it from me. To get 30% off almost everything your favorite collegiate apparel provider offers. You can knock out some holiday gifting. You can refresh your own supply. You can get a TCU hoodie because you want to wear something that says frogs in script lettering out into the world. Your reasons are entirely up to you, but the deadline is not. By the time the next Wednesday episode of Phantom Island comes out, this deal will be gone. So get on it. Go to homefieldapparel.com and use offer code HOMEFIELD30 as soon as possible. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, so let's talk about the hurdles. Time difference is the one we have focused most on.
Yeah.
I do want to say, I tried to find like an example of like, is there another league that works this way? Isn't there another league that has like this kind of, I guess that would be longitudinal expansion?
Yeah, I don't think there is.
I found one, the KHL, the Russian Hockey League, because they have a team in Shanghai and two others on the Pacific coast of Russia. If you're thinking on the risk board, this is up by Alaska. Okay.
Wow.
There's Shanghai and two over there. It also has a team in Minsk. Which, if you're trying to place where Minsk is,
I know where Minsk is.
It's about as far east as Helsinki. So that's the space that we're talking about.
Is that in Belarus?
Yeah, okay. It's in Belarus.
Boom, geography quiz.
That's right. That is roughly comparable to the distance that we are talking about.
Ryan, I am suddenly so much more interested in the KHL. I didn't know that they had a team in China.
Yeah. They were in Beijing. They've just moved to Shanghai.
Still?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's just such a large amount of the globe.
Can I tell you the weirdest part? The Shanghai team is in the same division as the Minsk team. Like, two of the farthest points apart on the KHL map.
This is vindication.
Are in the same division.
This is vindication for the old NFL lineup where the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were in the Central and the Saints
were
in the West.
Jesus.
And the Arizona Cardinals were in the East.
Yeah. So
fucking hell.
That's the best comp. Now, so like
spoiler, we're gonna have a KHL episode soon.
The time
I'm suddenly interested.
Hi, future Ryan here with one quick note. I didn't realize this at the time we recorded, but the Shanghai Dragons, who were previously based in Beijing, aren't playing in China, and they actually haven't since the COVID-19 pandemic started, more or less. They're currently playing in St. Petersburg, which is significantly closer to Minsk, and that's why those teams share a division right now. Now, the Dragons do plan to head back to Shanghai in an upcoming season, and those other two teams way on the east coast of Russia, yes, they do in fact play in their home cities. I just had to get this in here in case the true KHL diehards wanted to come at me.
The time difference is the biggest problem. It's simultaneously the biggest problem and the biggest opportunity.
Okay.
I see you making
sense. Yeah, I'm incredulous. I'm also someone who's very grumpy about his sleep, so continue.
So the opportunity is, if you're trying to become a global game, putting a team or teams, and we're going to get into that separately as well, gives you an opportunity to own a new part of the global television day that doesn't interfere with your current product. You can play games at a time, like much like the London Games work now. The London Games are on super early East Coast time, or pretty early East Coast time.
Right.
But they are not up against other NFL. Like, it's just additive to the NFL's domestic inventory. It's not competitive with it.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're another sport, I think I do think a big reason why the Premiership has really found its footing in the States is it doesn't compete with American football.
No.
Because it's just not on at 8:30 in the morning.
Right, right.
Well, unless you live on the West Coast.
Now, the negative with the time difference is obviously it's a ton of travel. I would say...
Bro, that's brutal. Go to Minsk, from Minsk to Shanghai?
Yeah.
On the reg?
Yeah. That's what we would essentially be talking about here. So the time difference is the hurdle we can't control for. It is the biggest one that just has to be dealt with. But there are other hurdles that go with putting a team in London that we should talk about. I'm going to go through all the hurdles that apply no matter the scenario, and then we're going to talk about two different scenarios we can go down. Next hurdle, facilities. Every game that we play in the NFL UK series, they're all in soccer stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
Wembley is kind of a special exception because it doesn't have a primary home tenant.
Yes.
The Football Association just owns it, and they use it for all kinds of things. But they use it for, like, the FA Cup, the men's and women's national teams play there. Like,
so I have been to Old Trafford.
Mm-hmm.
I have been to Man City, but it was a renovation ago.
Mm-hmm.
I did this in pro wrestling, and I'm not going to dwell and explain it. And I've been to Wembley for this NFL event. I've also been to Wembley for other things.
Yeah.
For the listener, the uninitiated, I would say Wembley, other than maybe some of its design choices, like aesthetically, you're at an NFL stadium, more or less. You would walk around and be like, it would be the same as standing outside of NRG in Houston or somewhere like that. The other soccer stadiums, you look at it a little quizzically. Like, I've been to Aviva in Ireland, too, where I'm like, oh, I guess you could technically play an NFL game or an American football game in here.
Right.
But it doesn't look and feel like an NFL experience at first glance. But, I mean, shit, like, you know, Michigan and Northwestern just played a college football game in Wrigley Field, which is not the first time that's happened. So,
okay. It won't be the last either.
No.
So, your first issue is that you have to figure out the stadium issue because these are all right now. These games are all being played as like a renter of sorts. You're sort of borrowing somebody else's turf.
Right.
NFL teams have talked about how challenging this is, especially not so much with like the stadiums themselves, but like practice facilities. And you can go back and find stories about like, yeah, we had to practice at this like random lawn. And like, there's a lot of having to make do.
But that's not happening right now. If you go and play at, for instance, the newer grounds or stadium, whatever you want to call it, pitch for
Tottenham
Hotspur.
Yeah.
If I recall, Ryan, there were like not concessions, but design choices made for this new stadium to host American football, right?
I believe that is correct.
Okay.
Yes, I believe that is correct.
So if I go to England, whether it's Tottenham or it's Wembley,
where
am I practicing right now?
It's a mixed bag. It depends.
Still? Like you're still having weird shit happen?
It depends on, like the Ireland game was an example, I think was another example of like, oh, okay, we had to do some like weird things.
Really?
I'm saying that's like how it exists now. If you're building a franchise there, there's a difference between we can fit you in for this week or these couple of weeks as the Vikings did in their experiment this year. Now we're talking about you need full-time facilities year round. And that's where it becomes harder to say.
Land is at a premium over in the old European continent.
Yes, very much so. London has population density of about 15,000 people per square mile, which is just a little bit below San Francisco. And far higher than LA. Like, this is not a place where you can just sort of say like, oh yes, there's all sorts of places to build.
Yeah.
New stadium, new practice facility, new offices, new X, Y, and Z.
It almost feels like it would have to happen in conjunction with maybe a large existing soccer team.
Right. The problem with the large existing soccer teams is they have stuff to do in their soccer stadium.
They got
to
do the soccer stuff.
Yeah. So we'll use Tottenham as an example. This is from September to December of 2024. They had 7 home events on a Sunday. They had 2 more if you add up Saturdays. And if you add Thursdays, because Thursday can be an NFL night, as we know as well, that's 13. That's 13 times that Tottenham was booked to play at home across a 4-month period there. But that doesn't include times they need the stadium for other things or times that the groundskeepers need to, like, it's not as...
Well, a lot of these teams have women's teams now, too.
Yes, and that's just the Tottenham men's team that I'm talking about.
And what if you end up in the Champions League one year?
Right.
Okay, yeah, I got it. So you're steering me towards, you can't piggyback off of some other enterprise. You're going to have to find land, which is hard, and you're going to have to declare it a probably year-round, full-use American football facility in Europe, which feels kind of hard and not feasible.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying there are more hurdles than you might initially think. I will say one thing that's working in your favor, there's a lot of overlap between NFL owners and EPL owners.
Yeah.
Shad Khan, who owns the Jaguars, is one of them.
Yeah.
So I could see a situation where you say, if you have joint ownership,
right,
like, yeah, now I have an incentive to make this work for both of my properties rather than the thing I own and the thing I'm being forced to share with.
So far, I would make one suggestion, which is that if you need an NFL roster that's used to practicing in unorthodox, cramped spaces on the cheap, you should just move the Bengals.
All right. Third general hurdle you have to overcome to make this work. Player interest. You have to, it's one thing to tell players, hey, everybody's doing this. We're all going to London. We're going to have a big time. I have some good quotes here about how some players felt about that. But this is different because now you're telling players you have to live far away from your family. England and Europe at large are not feeder countries for NFL talent.
Can confirm.
So you have to.
There's only one, OCU Manure.
Now you're telling a roster of 53 guys, you have to come live here full time.
Yeah.
For many of our home games, your family that doesn't live, unless they've moved with you, for them to come, it involves you have to have a passport, you have to travel. Like, it's a much bigger deal than, hey, you play for the Bucks, but you just signed with, you know, the Chiefs in the offseason. It's like, okay, that's pretty workable. Yeah, I can make that work. That's not a big deal.
Sure.
Number two. Taxes.
Oi.
Everyone on an NFL roster, per a Miami Law Review article that I checked out, would be in the 45% tax bracket in London.
Uh-oh.
That's that rate at which they would be taxed.
45% of their income?
They'd be in the 45% marginal tax bracket.
I'm sure they're going to love that.
The UK also has a practice of taxing all your global endorsement money if you live in the UK.
Dude, it's like you read my mind. I was about to say, well, you could just...
Nope.
So in other words, the Brits are not going to put up with the old New York State resident bullshit where it's like, I actually live in Clearwater.
I don't think that's going to happen. No.
Okay. That might be the biggest hurdle thus far.
And also, you are now, depending on the scenario we go down, you have to do a lot of travel. Let's say we're talking about one team. Let's say it's a year you get 9 home games. 8 times a year, you have to fly across the Atlantic to go play a football game.
Yes, and not fly across the Atlantic for to go to a business meeting. Mm-hmm. Not fly across the Atlantic to go on a fun vacation.
Yep.
Fly across the Atlantic at the peak of your physical being and then perform at the peak of your physical ability and then get on a plane and go home and do that again at home next week.
Yes, and all the options where it's like, well, what if we have you play like 3 games in a row? It's like, cool, now I'm playing 3 road games.
Ryan, the reason why I feel like this is never going to happen is because I'm now thinking about the sport of hockey.
Yeah.
And the immense amount of teeth gnashing that goes on in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'll give you one example, although they're probably better for it. Toronto Maple Leafs fans were absolutely chapped in the ass when our local team, the Nashville Predators in Tennessee, signed Steven Stamkos, a Canadian, an Ontarioan, we'll go with that.
Sure.
Away from, in free agency, obviously he was leaving the Tampa Bay Lightning after a multi-cup run. And the let's say, comparatively history-free Nashville Predators signed away Stamkos from potentially going to the Toronto Maple Leafs to contend for a Stanley Cup. this has happened consistently with the Dallas Stars. The Dallas Stars, Mike Modano, and several other free agents over the years have pulled the same trick against sort of legacy or brand name franchises in the NHL, such as the Montreal Canadiens. Even the Canucks have suffered from this. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I think there's a tax thing that's part of it.
Taxes, dude! Why do you think the Panthers win multiple? Like, the Panthers are a dynasty right now in Miami. Yes, also, if you're a young hockey player, believe it or not, you don't want to be cold 24 hours a day. Sure. That's a small part of it. But the money alone, man, that really jumps off the page at me.
Yeah.
The residential element of this, as once you have a family, I also think about hockey. I can think of a couple free agents that have actually that are from Canada or Minnesota, that area, who do end up moving closer to home when they have young families.
Yeah.
Financially, they can swing it. They're still millionaires.
Yeah.
How inapplicable would this be if you have two or three young kids? Like, let's use the example you just gave. You are from wherever, but you're drafted by the Buccaneers.
Yep.
You're there for 4 or 5 years. You and your wife have two kids. Okay, I'm going to sign a free agent deal because I'm a millionaire athlete to play for the Chiefs.
Yep.
It's a little bit easier to fly grandma on them from Tampa to Kansas City. Then imagine that now with an international barrier, the time difference, et cetera, so forth. There's some people who work at various levels of the NFL for various franchises in the NFL who listen to our program.
Yeah.
One of those individuals, shout out, buddy, was again, I probably putting salt in the wound about my Atlanta fandom by saying, like, you know, the real reason it's embarrassing, and I was like, oh, please tell me, but he made a really good point. He goes, think about the advantage certain cities have in free agency. And how the Packers are that much more remarkable because it's hard to draw a free agent to Green Bay.
Yeah.
Unless Jerry Jones tortures you for 4 years, you tend to not want to greenlight going to Green Bay. So now again, Ryan, you've got me at a complete like non-starter. I didn't think anything would top my grumpiness about like not getting enough sleep
travel,
or being off your sleep schedule. Taxes and your wife and kids being pissed off, this I feel like we're at a no-go here, man.
Well, it would be challenging. I do want to bring in a couple of quotes here, and these are cherry-picked 100% from two players talking about their experience playing the London Games as they exist now. The first one is from Kenny Britt. I believe this is from his reflecting on a game he played when he was with the Rams. Quote, I hated London. I hated everything about it. I hated the flight. I hated being there so long. I hated the flight back. I hated the food. This is another one from Rasul Douglas.
Wait, hang on.
Yeah.
Kenny Britt elected to go to Rutgers.
Rutgers has great food, okay?
And he hated London.
He hated London.
Wow, okay.
Rasul Douglas, quote, it fucking sucked. You don't get to do nothing over there. You just fucking get on a plane, get over there and fucking practice, and then you play a game. You get back on the plane and travel fucking 8 hours somewhere else.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
This applies to every NFL city. The difference is, you know, the plug for your laptop works.
Yep.
You're not completely off your sleep schedule. And you're going to sit in the hotel and, you know, if you can get some barbecue or whatever, get a workout in, it's still the same cultural experience. In other words, like, if the Chargers have a game in, you know, New Orleans, they're not hitting Bourbon Street the night before.
Yes.
Everybody's just seeing a hotel and an airplane and a stadium. But when you just make that flight longer and any barriers to comfort that much higher, of course they're going to complain about it. So if you're British and you're listening to this, it's less a referendum on your culture and more just your weather and your time zone aren't ideal.
Now, that said, the NFL has lots of money, and I believe the NFL could throw lots of money at this problem. No room for a facility? Great. We're buying up blocks and blocks and raising, like, fuck it. We will build what we need to build. Taxes too high? Okay, we're either going to start lobbying like crazy in Parliament, or I could see a scenario where they say, you know what, the salary cap is higher for the London team because they have to pay players more because their effective income is drastically different than if they play for a U.S. franchise.
Okay.
Live far away from your family? You know what? We're going to adjust. Like, there are ways you could potentially adjust for some of this, but what I really want to get into now are all the things that putting a team in London would challenge to the NFL structurally today. I'm going to let you pick. Do you want to go down the path? We're going to go down both paths, so you can just pick the first one. Do you want to talk about adding one team in London or adding an entire division?
Oh, my God. We're going to do both?
Yeah, we're going to do both.
Well, then, logically, we should start with one team, and let me predict the problem. So I've outlined some of the problems.
Yes.
If you added one team, they would have to be in one of the Eastern divisions, because otherwise you would just increase almost sort of to a stupid effect the time zone differences for playing your division opponents.
This is where I will also point out that the NFC still includes Dallas, so Dallas is not particularly close to London.
Which means the Cowboys would complain about this.
Mm-hmm. The AFC East includes Miami, which is closer, but still a bit
close
of
from a time zone perspective, but you just added on, I believe, 3.5 hours of flight time.
Yes.
Okay. So no, we're not coming up with a lot of great solutions.
We're not totally. I mean, we're not totally solving that problem. Yeah.
Okay. So we know the NFC East won't break up. Maybe you modify the AFC East, and it's the. Who would you kick out though? You could keep the Jets, you could keep the Patriots, and you could keep the Bills. So you would kick the Dolphins out. Send them to the AFC South, where they would be gods, I tell you.
And you'd put the Colts back in the AFC East, where they used to play.
No, I've got to make room, though, for this British team, right?
No. You have a much bigger problem than you even realize.
Okay, what's up?
Unless you're kicking a franchise out of the league altogether.
God, would I love to, New Orleans.
So right now, the NFL has two 16-team conferences.
Correct.
Perfectly balanced.
Balanced in all things.
Four divisions, each with four teams.
And by the way, it took a long time for them to get to this balance.
We can't actually just add one team.
No, we got to add two.
We have to add two, at the very least, so that we can have even conferences.
Correct.
These conferences would then have uneven divisions. In this case, we would be talking about...
Which they used to.
Which they did. Yeah, if you go back to 1990, each conference had three divisions. Two of them had five teams. One had four. This would be three divisions with four teams and one division with five. Whether that includes the London team or not, you can sort of put to the side here. But that's the first problem, is you now create imbalanced divisions once again.
Okay.
Now, here's where it starts to get real, like...
Stupid.
It's a two sides of the coin thing. Let's say we put one team in London. Optimist, we have given London and maybe Europe at large like one thing to rally around. Like, you now have a
Europeans
team.
Famous for rallying with each other.
You now have one team, and maybe it's easier to focus enthusiasm on this is London's NFL team. If you care about football, this is the one you should adopt.
Sure.
The flip side of that is that all your eggs are in that basket. So if that franchise, and as we know, expansion franchises can have a rough go of it for a while. If that franchise sucks, there is no alternative. You have told them to care about this franchise and this franchise alone. And if they're bad, you're kind of screwed. There is no alternative.
You've pissed off a continent. Again, America.
Yes. Pro side, there's less talent dilution. The NFL already is probably, you know, depending on which team you follow and when you watch them during the season, you don't necessarily think like, wow, we have the WNBA problem of so many talented quarterbacks and not enough places to put them.
The opposite.
Right.
I think if we went by quarterbacks, the NFL would have like 10 teams.
The adding two teams will dilute that talent pool further. But it will do it a little less than if we added a full division.
Mm-hmm.
Travel-wise, this kind of sucks for this team, this one and a lone London outpost, because as we said, they've got to go overseas at least 8 times a year. Maybe they are clustering them in some ways, but they have all their road games are literally outside of the country. Who it really sucks for is the other teams in this division. Because they know they have to do this trip every year, and not everybody else in the NFL is necessarily going to have to, and they're certainly not going to have to do it in a division game. The games we're mostly talking about exist in the NFL, in the NFL's UK experiment right now. They don't, like, the Falcons didn't have to play the Panthers in Germany.
No, they've protected those games.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think making this divisional would start to make it a little bit more stressful.
I agree.
the other problem with doing the one team path is that you start to put you are not just sort of like putting all your eggs in one basket when it comes to can you get people to care about this locally. If the goal is to grow your TV audience, you now only have one entry point. You have one thing on television for them, and it has to be good.
This feels like it would be, even considering we've got to change the finances to account for the taxes and maybe cost of living or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, it's funny because you know what we've actually created? The real Cowboys.
Sure.
Stay with me.
Sure.
Right. Everybody gets to plant tongue firmly in cheek and say America's team, right?
Yeah.
And usually we're doing it
mockingly. What we've created is Notre Dame when it's bad.
Yeah. This is now Europe's team, literally.
Yeah.
And it's way... I tell you what, the NFL, we all get a good laugh out of like ESPN and Fox are overextending their coverage of the Cowboys. But they don't actually represent an entire nation or fucking continent.
Right.
I feel like there would almost be too much pressure on this already sort of handicapped franchise to be successful.
It's an uphill battle, that's for sure. And it's not the same thing as, like, use the Texans as an example when they came into the league as a franchise. Like, even literally in Texas, you didn't have to be like, well, I either watch the Texans or nothing, you know? You had other options. You could get on board with the Texans as you wanted or didn't, but it didn't have to be like the bulk of your football diet if you didn't want it to be.
No, it's funny. Right before we went on, we were talking about like what it was like when we were growing up and how much we were subjected to teams we didn't like growing up. Like I grew up mainly my childhood was spent in the Washington, D.C. television market before the Ravens.
Yeah.
And so like I still hate the Commanders for that. And you grew up in Tampa and you weren't a Bucs fan. That's kind of what we're talking about.
It has elements of that, for sure. All right. So that's the one option I've given you. We're just going to do one team. We're just going to dip a toe in the water. We're going to see how it goes.
Yeah, I don't like this so far.
Okay. Let's talk about one division. We're putting four teams in the London, in the UK, let's say. You can spread them out in Europe if you want to. I'm going to let you make that choice. All right.
Okay, real fast.
Yeah.
Let's just go. One in Germany. I'm not going to pick a city because I don't want to hear arguments about it. One in Spain.
Yep.
Of course, one in England. And you know what?
NFL France?
No. Let's give the Irish something finally.
Great. Okay. Good.
They'll love that.
All right. This is your NFL Europe division that you have set up.
Sure. Why not?
Great.
Dublin, London, Munich. All right. Madrid, whatever.
Now we have created new problems for the NFL because now we've added an entire division, but that's not how conferences work. We can't just have one conference with one division entirely and one that doesn't have it at all. So we have to start spreading things out again. We have to probably tear apart one division and start putting those teams. We have to
AFC
completely
South,
realign.
No one will notice.
We got to realign so many things to make this work.
No one will notice.
To make this happen, we have to completely undo the NFL as it currently exists.
Unless you added two divisions and the other division was like all Latin America.
Sure.
They get four teams.
Sure.
Usually.
The idea of adding eight NFL teams, which I believe is more than have been added in our entire lifetimes.
Buddy, you guys think watching G5 football is rough. Add eight new quarterbacks to the pro. Oh my god!
So one team can be doable because we can live in a world of unbalanced divisions. An entire division, you know, added on as sort of an extra limb to a conference creates all kinds of realignment.
Yeah,
problems.
Definitely.
Like so much so that I'm not going to spell them out because there's too much math to.
So yeah, so far all I can envision is the world's most expensive vestigial tail.
Right.
Like, this is awful.
Now let's talk about the good news though. Your travel is much more simplified. It both for these teams
for
and
a little
for
bit.
The rest of the NFL. No, what do you mean for a little bit?
So wait, what you're pitching is the obvious intra-divisional play.
Yes.
Which is going to take six games off of your schedule every year.
It's going to take six games off
of
your schedule.
So if we kept the way it currently, so in other words, if you're in the NFC East, you play your opponents six times.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You're three opponents twice.
Yep.
So it's 6 out of a 17 game schedule that you've taken care of. You still have to play 11 games against the people back on the other continent.
No, you don't have to play all of them back on the other. Yes, against those teams.
Yeah, against
but
those teams.
You split those up.
So you'd split those. So now you're trimming down your trips to the States. And mm-hmm. I think what you're about to propose to me, and this would work both in Europe and the United States, is you're tagging the travel. So in other words, what you're doing, and this is what the University of Hawaii has done for years.
Yep.
The University of Hawaii will fly from UH in Honolulu to the mainland.
Yep.
And they'll play San Diego State on the road. They'll play the San Diego State game, and they won't fly back on Sunday. What they'll do on Sunday is they'll fly to Denver, and they'll base for a week at a hotel, take it over, create classes.
Yep.
And now it's even easier because I'm told now they just do virtual classes back home. They will have class, practice, meals, and instruction, all like game plan install in a hotel, what did I say, in Denver? Mm-hmm. And then they go play in Fort Collins at Colorado State, and right. You've knocked out two of the road games in one very long 10-day, about 10-day trip, something like that. Right. And then you fly home to Honolulu. Is that what you're pitching me?
I think it's more feasible when you only have to worry about it for 5 or 6 games. You can bundle them in better ways.
I can already see the sort of the lowest brow of the NFL media talking about like, man, this team was 1-2 before and this guy's injured and now they've got to go to Europe for 10 days.
Yeah, sure. If you want a team in Europe, you have to deal with this in some – like the alternative is you are a division member with the single NFL team, mm-hmm. the single London team, this has to get thrown into your schedule in ways that you might not like.
I'm not saying the National Football League lacks for revenue.
Yeah.
This is highly expensive.
Potentially, yeah.
No, you have to have a training table that's mobile. If anything, here's what they're going to have to do in your scenario. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to create – a sort of truck stop, a way station for every NFL
Iceland.
Team that's coming in. I'm serious.
Yeah, I know.
Because you're going to have a training table.
Yep.
You're going to have all the meals monitored. You're going to have all of the normal PT and whirlpools and massage tables and all of the stuff that maybe y'all don't know that goes in on like the Monday through Friday for a football team. And you'd have to have it in constant operation for probably 2 franchises at all times in Europe.
Yes.
So you would have to have probably, if you have 4 teams, you'd have to have at least 2 franchises from North America in Europe at all times that aren't based there.
And if you're trying to build your European audience, that's a really good way to do it. I understand what you're saying from a logistics standpoint, but the idea is we want more televised football that this part of the world can watch at times that are good for them, this is much more the way to do it than putting one franchise.
Well, what
you would
do is, so if you use the, and I still can't solve for the vestigial tail part of this where there's just one extra division now.
Yes.
But so the way it works now is that those of you who don't know, you're a team in a division, you play the teams in your division, and then every year you play 2 other divisions. There are some extra teams that are thrown on the end based off of the last year's strength of schedule finish. But those are only, if I recall, 2 teams. The rest of it is you play 6 plus 4 plus 4, and then maybe you add 1 on. So that makes 17 regular. So what you're talking about is, so for instance, in the AFC North, the Bengals and Browns would play on Sunday in Cleveland.
Sure.
They would then both fly to this, Zurich. Would you say Reykjavik or something? Whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And then they would both be at this facility simultaneously.
Yeah.
I guess.
Great.
Or
lagoon.
2 facilities.
Go to the lagoon. Great time.
Yeah, that's right. You took a trip there. Then one would go fly to Madrid, and one would go fly to Dublin.
Sure.
Play a game.
Yeah.
Then they would
probably flip.
Come back to Iceland.
Or they'd go. Well, no, you'd stay because then you'd go from your Spain team is probably going to Germany. Your Dublin team is probably going to
London.
Yeah, sure. Whatever.
But then you'd have to go back to this magical place for a second week.
Oh, buddy, we're definitely adding bye weeks to the NFL schedule if this happens.
This the NFL would love, because they would love nothing more, honestly, than for some reason to step on the throat of college football, its fucking unpaid feeder system minor league, and extend in one direction or the other.
To briefly
explain,
if the
Super Bowl was in March, I think Roger Goodell would, his erection would kill him.
To briefly explain how you would make this work from a realignment perspective, because it did just click for me in real time here. So let's say you added this as an AFC division you now have a 20-team conference and a 16-team conference, and we need them to both be 18.
Yep.
You dissolve the AFC South. Two of those teams stay in the AFC and go to one of the other existing divisions.
Yeah.
Two of them go to divisions in the NFC. We have then 2 4-team divisions, 2 5-team divisions in each league. It just so happens that one of the 4-team divisions in the AFC is all European.
Please send the Texans to the NFC East just so I can piss off the Cowboys.
All right. So the other sort of like double-edged sword here. If you put 4 teams in Europe, I think you could have the potential for more meaningful natural rivalries. You have more like, I root for Dublin and therefore I hate London. I'm a fan of the Spanish team.
That's already happening just in life,
sure,
by the way.
Sure. So I'm
not sure if you're familiar with Irish history, but just a skosh of that.
So you can create positive...
Car bomb's not just a drink.
You can create natural rivalries, which can make this more meaningful to fan bases and sort of get everybody involved in this in a much more real way. You might also be over-indexing and spread your fan bases too thin. Like, what you're sort of saying is, like, can we get organic support for 4 new teams at once in Europe? Because...
I think you could.
Okay.
That I'm not worried about.
Because if we're adding 4... Like, we've already stipulated that expansion teams have usually a long road to competitiveness. Not always. Shout out to the Panthers and Jaguars in their early seasons.
Fun fact, yeah. Year 2 for both of them, they made the conference championship game.
If we're adding 4 new expansion franchises, at least 2 of them are going to suck. Yeah. At least 2 of them.
Yeah.
And so now...
How many did Woody Johnson own?
So now we have that hurdle to deal with as well.
All right.
We also have... Major talent dilution by adding 4 franchises to the NFL.
Yeah. So the first positions you're going to notice are going to be, other than quarterback, corner.
Yes.
You're going to notice that drop off pretty consistently. This is just from talking to college coaches.
Yep.
Your tackles, your left and right tackles.
Right.
I think those will probably be the worst.
Right.
I would be interested for the coaches who listen to this to tell me if I'm over or undervaluing a position here, but... There are often years where it feels like, I mean, think about how often nickel and dime are called as defensive coverages in the NFL. There really is like a paucity of good NFL defensive back play.
Yeah.
So to add 4 more franchises would be, honestly, Ryan, it's Major League Baseball.
Potentially.
Like there's not enough there's never enough Major League pitching, which is why the free agent market is so jacked.
Right.
This would do a lot to free agency.
So, I said we weren't necessarily going to reach a conclusion here, and I'm not going to, because I think what's fascinating about this is that there is no clearly good and smart path. I think if you do 1 team or even 2 teams, you leave a lot of problems on the table, and you create existing NFL franchises that are very unhappy. Nobody wants to be the franchises that are in the division with the English cousin. They just don't. They're going to hate it.
You've definitely convinced me not to endorse a 1-team solution. The 4-team division feels like, with so many caveats, asterisks, and hurdles considered, the only possible solution moving forward. I will close with this.
Yeah.
I know they're ready because I was sitting in a restaurant in France 3 years ago, and I don't know what it's called. The Super Bowl of rugby was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before France hosted the Olympics. So they were using some of the same facilities. I was sitting at a lovely French restaurant having a lovely French meal. And there's a father and son, adult father and son, that had come from a very, 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 very tiny village in Ireland. Have I told you this story?
I don't think so, no.
Well, I guess you know where it's going to end. And they had on their green, and Ireland had broken into the Final Four for the first time in a long, long time. But I think they were about to play the All Blacks.
Yeah.
So congratulations, UCF. You made it to the Final Four. Now you're about to play like Bama, and if you win, Ohio State. That's the situation, okay? Right. And so the Irish family, we struck up a conversation with them, and they said, we're a little worried. Like, you know, we wanted to do well in the bracket. Now we're here. Obviously, we're really excited. We just don't want to embarrass ourselves on the biggest stage possible for rugby, because rugby is very important in Ireland.
Yeah.
And they told us that they were from some tiny little village I'd never heard of on the west coast of Ireland. And I said, well, it could be worse. I support an American football team that embarrassed itself by blowing the largest lead in the history of the championship game. And that old fucking Irishman looked at me, had never been off his goddamn farm, first time to France, and he said, "Oh, the Atlanta Falcons." So Europe's ready.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber. Our theme song is also called Phantom Island from the album of the same name by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you again soon.